So let's start with this rather intriguing lady. I think there've been something in the region of 16 operas written about Francesca de Rimini. She seems to have all the elements. There's an adulterous relationship, there's family feuding, but 16 operas, it's a lot.
Well, I think the composers in this time just found it an extremely interesting and intriguing story. Plus, D'Annunzio, the playwright from which the story comes, was very famous. So I think, you know, they just really loved it. And a lot of people had an interest to try their hand at setting it.
You play the evil brother. There are three brothers involved here. There's the husband, there's the lover, and then there's you orchestrating things behind the scenes. I guess you are the baddest brother of the three, right?
I'm bad. Well, I Malatestino, he's just a mess. I think he's an angry guy. He's just full of it. He's ready to go out there. I mean, his one line in the 3-minute chunk in the second act, when they bring him up off the ramparts and he's been fighting and he's taken a stone in the eye, and they all say, "Well, can you go back?" He says, "Oh, I only need one eye." And you know, he's just ready to go back. Let me at him. You know, no, Malatestino is just, he just has a bad personality. Maybe he felt, you know, shunted by all the, you know, Paolo is so handsome and beautiful and probably one of the preferred brothers, and Giovanni is, he got the girl, and
he's brave with it as well.
Right. And so I think Malatestino is just, well, Maladitesta, he's just a little headache, you know. No, I'm just...
The obvious problem with this character is that it's actually pretty difficult to overplay him, is it? I mean, he would appear on the face of it to be fairly one-dimensional. He's angry and he's going to mess things up, and that's his whole role in life, seems to be to destroy everything that's in front of him. Is that the case, or are there subtleties to this guy?
Well, I think that really is sort of the case. I mean, he's really not so subtle. At least that the script doesn't really give you a lot of opportunity to be subtle. I mean, even when he's maybe whispering something into her ear, it's actually not subtle words. It's not subtle stuff. So,
and then in terms of your delivery as a singer, I mean, the acting part of it is clearly defined. What can you bring to it? That, I mean, how do you approach a role like this from a vocal point of view? Is it all very aggressive? Is it all very forced?
No, not at all. Just like I said, sometimes he's almost whispering to her and saying, you know, look, you're preparing food for Giovanni's trip, and, you know, I can maybe prepare some other food for his trip, implying, you know, something possibly poisoned or something. But, you know, he says that. It's all very surreptitiously and right close to her and insinuating, and she turns around and says, you know, what are you trying to, betray him, or are you a traitor or something? And then he laughs it off and goes on with his general aggression. But it's just because he's very direct about what he wants, and of course he wants her. But you don't always do that in triple forte.
In terms of the preparation for this, because it's going to be seen by a lot more people than are in the hall, and it's going to be seen in, well, literally high definition, but actually in greater definition than is available to the people who are beyond the first six rows. Does the preparation for the acting part of this differ because the cameras are there?
No. I don't think so. I mean, it's acting and performing in the operatic idiom is already an extension of emotions over what might be a longer than normal delivery if you were just doing a play. So therefore, you know, everything plays in your body language. Your body language and your facial expressions, if you're doing it right, are going to look good in the house as well as on the camera. So I do my best not to think about the camera, actually. I mean, I'm not playing for the camera in the case of the HD performances. For me, the most important thing is to remain completely truthful and concentrated in the words that I'm singing, and let the words do what they're meant to do, which is propel the scene forward.
But in terms, again, of the body language, you're with the cameras there, you can make it a lot smaller because, you know, a gesture doesn't have to hit the background. I mean, I guess it does because you have an audience there. Have you ever had an experience of a director or anybody else who's involved in the production offering instruction on what, if any, differences there are? Is it really about just doing what you do normally?
It really is about doing what you do normally, because this is an HD performance or an HD showing of a live performance. So
it's not a movie.
It's not a movie. We're not making a movie. For me personally, I mean, I don't know. Some singers may make some small adjustments for the camera, but for me personally, I still play it for the house, and I count on, I guess I'm counting on the cameraman and the director of the camera shots to pick the right things that still give the people in the theater. And, you know, in most of those theaters, they have big screens and they're sitting back, and some of them are stadium seating, so they can feel like they're at a live performance.
What's the difference between the Met and I mean, you've played everywhere, you've sung everywhere. What's the difference between the Met and everywhere else in terms of stepping out there as a performer? Because, of course, there's that, you know, not to quote Frank Sinatra, you know, you've made it when you're there. Is that the case? Is it another performance for somebody as seasoned as yourself?
Well, look, in some respects, it is another performance because every performance is a special performance. Every night you go out, no matter whether you're in Palermo or Trieste or London or Vienna or wherever you are, you go out there every night to give that particular audience your best show. So that's the guiding thing about my performance anyway. Now, is the Met special? Of course the Met is special. First of all, the Met is just the biggest opera house in the world. Nobody operates, nobody functions and puts on this many operas. So it's a phenomenal place. And the other thing that's so beautiful is that the hall is one of the most beautiful halls to sing in. Of all the theaters I've sung in, I think the Met is the most relaxing because it was just really well built. Really well done, and it's a great place to work. Plus, the backstage support is phenomenal. You know, everything you need, you know, adjustments to your costume, any kind of support you need. The Met has the best of the best support, so.
They make it easy.
They do. They really do.
Let me take you back. We actually have a transmitter in Mannheim Township, where you're from.
And
So the neighbors, your former neighbors, and if you have family there, will be also listening to this. Can you tell me a little bit about your development as a singer and when it became apparent to you or to anybody else that you had this amazing voice? Was it very young? Was it after your voice broke? How and when or did you know that you had this voice, that you had this talent?
Well, the first indications were when I was right after my voice broke and I had my teacher in high school, Charles Millard, took very good care of me, and he took me under his wing for a while and gave me some lessons. And then I had the opportunity to see our local opera company, the Lancaster Opera Workshop, come and perform. And in there was a lady named Romaine Bridgette. And I was so impressed with her performance and the commitment of her performance. I mean, even as a teenager, I really wanted to study with her. So I called her up and began to study with Romaine Bridgette. And before I knew it, I did a little contest for the Lancaster Opera Workshop. And within about a year and a half, I was a baritone then. I was cast to do Silvio in Pagliacci at this local. Now, of course, I was cast way ahead of my time, but nevertheless, they saw the promise in my voice. And for a local little company like that, you know, If it was viable, they cast you to do it.
And, but a baritone, even speaking, you sound like a tenor.
I was a baritone. I grew up as a baritone. I was a baritone through my first early years at City Opera. And
is that a range you could comfortably go back down to at the drop of a hat, or is it different now?
Well, you carry your voice in a slightly different place, but some of the baritone roles, yes, I could still sing. But yes, that was, I always make the joke with some friends, you know, my story at City Opera was that I joined the chorus as a baritone chorister, and the last thing I sang there 17 years later was Rodolfo in Bohème. So that's been a fun journey.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.